Vimes. Happens to us all, Winsborough. A man's mind starts to wander. He's never quite certain of what he's done. Vimes maintained a friendly grin. It was as good as raining blows. Besides, he'd given Nock his correct name. The man never used it in public for fear of the panic it might cause. Just thought I'd put your mind at rest about it, said Vimes. Sergeant Winsborough Nock shifted uneasily from one foot to the other. He wasn't certain whether he'd got away with something or had just ended up getting deeper into something else. Tell me more about Lance Corporal Coates, said Vimes. Nock's face was, for a moment, an agony of calculation, and then he adopted his usual policy. When you think there's wolves on your trail, throw someone off the sleigh. Ned, sir, he said, hard worker, of course, does his job, but a bit tricky between you and me. How? And you don't have to call me sir, Winsborough. Not out here. He reckons Jack's as good as his master, if you know what I mean. Reckons he's as good as anyone. Bit of a troublemaker in that respect. Barrack room lawyer? That sort of thing, yeah. Rebel sympathies? Nock turned his eyes up innocently. Could be, sir. Wouldn't like to see the lad in trouble, of course. You think I'm a spy for the unmentionables, thought Vimes, and you're throwing coats to me. The other day you were pushing him for promotion. You little worm. Worth keeping an eye on, then, he said aloud. Yes, sir. Interesting, said Vimes. Always a worrying word to the uncertain. It certainly worried Nock, and Vimes thought, my gods, perhaps Vetinari feels like this all the time.
Some of us, go round to the Broken Drum after the shift's over, said Nock. It's open round the clock. I don't know if you...
I don't drink, said Vimes.
Oh, yeah, you said Nock.
And now I'd better pick up young Sam and get out on patrol, said Vimes. Nice to have had this little talk with you, Winsborough. He strode past, taking care not to look back. Sam was still waiting in the main office, but was sucked into his wake as he swept past.
I say, who's the skirt up there with old Folly?
The prefects looked up. On the raised platform at the end of the noisy hall, Dr. Follett, Master of Assassins and ex officio headmaster of the Guild School, was in animated conversation with, indeed, a lady. The vivid purple of her dress made a splash of colour in the vast room, where black predominated, and the elegant whiteness of his hair shone like a beacon in the darkness. It was a Guild of Assassins, after all. Black was what you wore. The knight was black and so were you, and black had such style, and an assassin without style, everyone agreed, was just a highly paid arrogant thug. The prefects were all over 18 and therefore allowed to visit parts of the city that the younger boys weren't even supposed to know about. Their pimples no longer erupted at the sight of a woman. Now their eyes narrowed. Most of them had already learned that the world was an oyster that could be opened with gold if a blade did not suffice.
Probably a parent, said one of them. I wonder who's the lucky boy.
I know who she is, said Ludo Ludorum, head of Viper House. I heard some of the masters talking earlier. She's Madame Roberta Meserole. Bought the old house in Easy Street. They say she made a pile of money in Genoa and wants to settle down here. Looking for investment opportunities, apparently.
Madam, said Downey, an honorific or a job description.
In Genoa, could be both, said someone to general laughter.
Folly's certainly plying her with champagne, said Downey. They're on their third bottle. What have they got to talk about?
Politics, said Ludo. Everyone knows Winder isn't going to do the decent thing, so it'll be down to us. And Folly's annoyed because we've lost three chaps up there already. Winder's pretty cunning. There's guards and soldiers everywhere you look.
Winder's a skag, said Downey.
Yes, Downey, you call everyone a skag, said Ludo calmly. Well, everyone is.
Downey turned back to the table, and a movement, or rather a lack of movement, caught his eye. Towards the far end, one young assassin was sitting reading, with a bookstand positioned in front of his plate. He was intent on it, an empty fork halfway to his mouth. With a wink at the others, Downey selected an apple from the bowl in front of him, stealthily drew his arm back and let fly with malicious accuracy. The fork moved like a snake's tongue and skewered the apple out of the air. The reader turned a page. Then, eyes never leaving the print, he delicately brought the